Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Lied to
the government. They were innocent.
They have no idea what they're up against.
As quickly as you can, snatch the pebble from my hand. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to MediaMonarchy.com. It's episode 126. It's June 5th, 2009, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, another mysterious crash of Flight 447. David Carradine and Kung Fu Suicide, Tiller Killer and Recruiter Shooter, and the Murder Mayhem Meme, Obamasiah, the Cyber Czar, and the Middle Eastern Holiday, geopolitics, media programming, and another nightmarish news purge. It is all here. It's June 5th, 2009, episode 126 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Let your back.
That's insane new music from the neo-prog metal masters known as the Mars Volta. That track is called Cotopaxi from their new record, Octahedron. And if you've never checked out Mars Volta with ex-members of At the Drive-In, you're missing out. Even if you're not a metal fan, they're pretty impressive, and that song was relatively tame and relatively short for them. But enough about that. You're here for the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And this week will be no exception. It's June 5th, 2009. It's episode 126 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. from the home base of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And thanks to the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, simulcasting the show. And yes, I am very, very, very happy to announce that Media Monarchy has been picked up by KRocksRadio1.com, blasting out Media Monarchy on the site, as well as their LPFM station, 92.3 in Casper, Wyoming. So, I hope we're going to pick up some new folks that are out there. So, if you're new to this, welcome aboard. You'll have a hard time finding a show that crams in more insane news into a two-hour show. I also don't want to forget, and I do appreciate all the affiliates, 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. They rebroadcast the show Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And again, thanks to 93.9 Boulder, freeradio.com, KBFR, and also Glenn at cascadiapublicradio.org. And of course, you know it, FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org are the ways that you can get in touch with me. I keep signed in to Instant Messenger. Of course, Media Monarchy is the name. KRocks, they also have a chat room that you should check out, KRocksRadio1.com. Hit the chat button, type a name in, you're on board. And I would be remiss if I did not mention and thank to my man, Clyde Lewis, and the Ground Zero Lounge for making the connection between myself and he and KRocks. So thank you guys, and welcome aboard Casper, Wyoming, as well as the rest of the world. The interwebs, if you will. So, last Sunday, I did post up the announcement, Media Monarchy picked up by KRocks. And again, the links will be there for you. Also want to thank my man Zach for making an awesome flyer for MediaMonarchy.com. Didn't ask him to do it, he just did it. Take action. And that's pretty much the message of this show, and I think a lot of other shows like it. I ain't the smartest, brightest, swiftest, best guy in the world at all. I'm learning as I go. But hopefully that shows you can do it yourself. So I posted up the flyer, so I highly recommend you check it out, print it out, post it up. You've got a telephone pole near you somewhere. You can post it up. It's got the little flags at the bottom. You can take it off, and it'll put MediaMonarchy.com in someone's pocket and hopefully turn them on. But that's enough of that. You know, I had it in my mind that, you know, this week I'll kind of take it easy. Last week, if you're keeping score, I put up 5+ hours of new radio. We had the 1-hour interview with Alex Constantine. on the curious crash of Flight 3407. I believe you'll find that a little more interesting now when we get to the top story. We also did a B-side of 124, and we, of course, had episode 125, The Musical Monarchy. 2 hours of music and media, specially mixed and remixed just for you. The Media Monarchy mixtape. Perhaps if time allows in the future, I might make more. Perhaps if you email me and say you dug it, that might make me do it quicker. So I just referenced Alex Constantine in Flight 3407. And let me preface all this, especially with some of the stories that we're going to cover this week, again, as it being no exception to any other week for the last several years. There's an insane amount of news to cover, and it's really hard to do it justice. But what I wanted to say is that I'm not the kind of person that jumps on every little thing and says, oh, God, that's a conspiracy. Oh, God, this is fishy. But, and as well, this was something Alex, Constantine, and I mentioned, are the things sort of to look for in breaking news. And what you see appear and what you may see disappear or go down the memory hole, if you will. I was on top of Air France Flight 447 from the very beginning. I believe even at some point, once we got into day two or three of this mysterious crash, my girlfriend even said, she was like, wow, you called that one pretty much from the beginning. But again, I don't jump on every single thing. I don't jump on the bandwagon, although we're going to get to it in just a little bit. David Carradine and the Kung Fu Suicide starting to stink. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. You have no doubt heard about Air France Flight 447. I have one major posting on this story. Little Hope lost lightning? Question mark. And as a sidebar, what I'll mention, what I generally do with the site, I keep a week on the front page. And so, if a story keeps growing and morphing within the week, I'm going to add on to that original posting. I don't have the space to keep putting up individual posts for every single thing, and that would also make the front page ridiculous, or more ridiculously long than it already is. So, all in one posting, Air France Flight 447, Little Hope Lost Lightning. We will start at the beginning. This was posted up Tuesday, June 2nd, but the plane had gone missing the night before, and we'll begin with a report from Reuters. High seas search for Air France jet with 228 aboard. Search planes scoured the dark waters of the Atlantic Ocean early on Tuesday, looking for the remains of an Air France jetliner that disappeared in a severe storm with 228 people on board. The Airbus A330 went missing on a flight from Rio de Janeiro to Paris, and French President Nicolas Sarkozy said there was little chance of finding any survivors. France and Brazil sent military aircraft and ships to try to find wreckage on the high seas between Brazil and West Africa. It was carrying 216 passengers of 32 nationalities, including 7 children and 1 baby. 61 were French, 58 Brazilian, 26 German, 12 crew members were also on board. Tearful relatives in Paris and Rio were attended to by teams of psychologists. One of the Brazilians on board was Pedro Luis de Orleans y Braganca, a direct descendant of Dom Pedro II of Brazil, the last emperor of Brazil. And a spokesman for that royal family confirmed that to Reuters. Also on board, executives from French tire company Michelin, the Brazilian unit of German steelmaker ThyssenKrupp, Nazi, and Brazilian mining giant Vale, V-A-L-E. They were also among the passengers. The Air France flight flew into turbulent storms 4 hours after taking off from Rio, and 15 minutes later sent an automatic message reporting electrical faults. The company said a lightning strike could be to blame and that several of the mechanisms on the Airbus 330, which has a good safety record, had malfunctioned. But aviation experts said lightning strikes on planes were common and could not alone explain a disaster. Sources with access to flight data sent to the World Meteorological Organization said two Lufthansa jets passed through the same area of turbulence on Monday without incident. And that's from the first posting from Reuters. So that's early Tuesday morning. And again, as we move through these, I won't even be able to tell you how many links and research avenues you can follow. I'll just be able to give you the overview. An interesting one, and I've got to click this and we've got to go further on it. Passengers on flight 447 sent texts before the plane disappeared. The only place I found this story is on Wikinews, and as we click it now, but fortunately, folks, that's what is always key. You must always save the pages because they can change out from under you. I just clicked the link that's on MediaMonarchy.com about passengers sending texts, and it's now been removed from Wikipedia with a statement from the employer of Ronaldo Jenkins, who was cited as the source of this story, denies that he made the comments. He denies it. That's a telltale sign sometimes when stories start to change. So that is there for you, and that's there to pursue. Again, I'm not really surprised that that story's now gone. It had been flagged from the very beginning on Wikinews that this story might possibly be a hoax. Some of the other folks on the plane that we'll mention in a quick bit from the Houston Chronicle and the Associated Press, U.S. geologist and wife, were on the plane. Spokesman for Devon Energy Corporation confirms that the Americans on the Air France plane, which disappeared over the Atlantic Ocean, were 60-year-old Michael Harris and his wife Anne. Chip Minty of Oklahoma City says Michael Harris was a geologist in Devon's Rio office. He started with the company in 2004, became a full-time employee in 06, and he moved from Houston to Brazil last July. We do have a video, and we will hear a clip from that in just a moment, where we have a member of the French Pilots Union doubting that lightning could have downed Flight 447. And we now get to the updates that, of course, started to spill out. So we've got reports from the 2nd and the 3rd and the 4th, and here we are. Brazil confirms Air France jet crashed in the ocean, from the Associated Press. Brazilian Defense Minister Nelson Jobim, I'm a terrible foreign pronunciation, you know, I mangle it, J-O-B-I-M. Brazilian defense minister says a three-mile path of wreckage found in the Atlantic Ocean confirms that an Air France jet crashed in the sea. He said Tuesday that the discovery of the debris by Brazilian military pilots, quote, confirms that the plane went down in that area. Or did it? The next rack of updates. What could have happened? The question from ShaneMcDonald.org. Small blog. Left a comment. But on to the Daily Mail, where a pilot claims that Flight 447 was blown out of the sky. Investigators are baffled how a modern plane operated by three experienced pilots could have suddenly plunged out of the sky on a routine transatlantic flight. One theory is that the jet was downed by a mid-air collision, possibly involving a military spy jet or an aircraft piloted by drug runners. Another is that the jet was hit by lightning, causing a massive electrical short circuit. But an unidentified senior long-haul Air France pilot told a French newspaper, quote, I have flown these jets for Air France for more than 10 years, and the chances of an electrical fault seem unfeasible to me. There are five electricity supplies on the plane, and they would all have to fail. He said a bomb was the only logical reason for why the captain failed to send out a mayday call. That is from the Daily Mail, and something that we'll see throughout this is, again, as we've seen things change over the last few years, these curious questions aren't coming from the crazy conspiracy theory sites. That's coming from the Daily Mail. We're going to have other interesting questions from Discover Magazine or Time Magazine. Here's a question. Did a bomb bring down the French Airbus? That is from InfoWars. That's one of those conspiracy sites. So nothing to see there. Let's move along to threat level. for a bizarre bit of synchronicity. Flight447.com was registered in 2007. This from Threat Level. As investigators seek to unravel the fate of Air France Flight 447, there's been speculation online about an unusual domain name registration made some 2 years prior to this week's plane crash. Flight447.com. Cutting to the chase, there's a guy who runs a website registering company, and he says he basically just registers all kinds of things. He said, I buy flight 1 through 1,000, and then he tries to sell them and make money. That's from Threat Level, and that is interesting. And again, I can't do that justice, but I'm just here to plant seeds. And there's another one. Flight447.com was registered 2 years ago. Cause of Air France plane crash may never be known. That is from The Guardian, and data recorders may never be recovered. But again, from the Associated Press, Air France tells families there's no hope of survival. Air France told families to abandon any hope of survivors. A counselor present at a meeting with Air France's CEO says he told the families the plane broke apart either in the air or when it slammed into the ocean's surface, saying, quote, what is clear is that there was no landing. There's no chance the escape slides came out. Military rescue planes were trying to narrow the search zone Thursday as ships headed to the site to recover wreckage. Which gets us to another bit from Wikipedia, as well as the Associated Press. Wreckage of plane thought to be missing Air France flight found in the Atlantic. Brazil recovers first Air France flight 447 debris. This is from yesterday. A Brazilian helicopter crew recovered the first wreckage from 447 on Thursday, pulling a cargo pallet from the sea. No sign of human remains have been spotted, and Air France has told families that the jetliner broke apart, killing all 228 on board. Soldiers at Fernando de Noronha's airport, where any recovered human remains would be taken, unloaded body bags in a refrigerator truck on Thursday from a military plane. Patrick Smith, a U.S. airline pilot and aviation analyst, said the failures could have begun with a loss of electrical power, possibly as the result of an extremely strong lightning bolt. I will make the sidebar note that there were some extremely strong lightning bolts in downtown Portland, Oregon yesterday. What jumps out at me is the reported failure of both the primary and standby instruments, Smith said. From that point, the plane possibly became unflyable. We also have a spokesman for the Spanish airline Air Comet saying, quote, suddenly, off in the distance, we observed a strong and bright flash of white light that took a downward and vertical trajectory and vanished in 6 seconds. The pilot of that Spanish plane that witnessed that bright flash of light en route from Lima, Peru to Madrid said he heard no emergency calls. France's defense minister and the Pentagon have said there were no signs that terrorism was involved, and the Brazilian defense minister again said, quote, that possibility hasn't even been considered. Another question from Time magazine, could a computer glitch have brought down Flight 447? And then it gets interesting. That debris, that cargo pallet, not from Air France jet. This from the BBC. Debris recovered from the Atlantic by Brazilian search teams is, quote-unquote, sea trash. And not from a lost Air France jet. So, a Brazilian Air Force official said, quote, no material from the plane has been recovered. Teams found buoys and a wooden pallet and spotted a fuel slick and are now searching for an airline seat and a chunk of metal seen earlier this week. You'll probably recall at some point when they saw the oil slick, it was, oh, that's it, there it is. But it isn't. An interesting question from DiscoverMagazine.com. Did a meteor bring down Flight 447? So is it a meteor? Was it lightning? Was it a computer glitch? Was it a bomb? The last I have on this story, from the AFP, Air France crash mystery deepens. The mystery surrounding the crash of an Air France plane off the coast of Brazil deepened after Brazilian officials said items they had pulled from the sea were not, in fact, debris from the downed Airbus. The search by ships for wreckage from Air France Flight 447, which came down early Monday as it was flying from Rio to Paris. And again, we will quote, up to now, no material from the plane has been recovered. If we glance at Google News right now, I see nothing on the top front page of Google News. This seems to be where the story is floating right now. It's floating in a bizarre space where even mainline international press is saying the mystery deepens. We haven't heard the last of this by any stretch. But there are several videos in there, and one of the ones that seems to be getting a bit of attention will be the third part of this clip that we're about to hear about the mysterious crash of Air France Flight 447.
As military plane continued to locate more debris from Air France Flight 447, the timeline into exactly what happened aboard the doomed flight is starting to emerge. Right now, investigators are focusing on the theory the plane broke apart as it flew through a violent thunderstorm high above the Atlantic Ocean. At 11 o'clock p.m., the pilot sent a manual signal saying he was flying through an area of CBs, or clouds that come with violent winds and lightning. Satellite data show there were 100-mile-an-hour updraft winds into the jet's path at the time. Numerous problems popped up 10 minutes later. Automatic messages indicate the autopilot had disengaged, a key computer system had been turned to alternative power, and controls to keep the plane stable had been damaged. At 11:13, another automatic message reported the failure of systems that monitor airspeed, altitude, and direction. The final message came a minute later. It signaled the loss of cabin pressure and complete electrical failure. Officials are now hoping to find plane's black boxes. That could prove to be difficult because of the topography of the bottom of the ocean.
I'm not so optimistic. It's not only deep. It's also very mountainous.
Many experts said Wednesday the automatic reports of system failure suggest the plane broke up in midair. One possible cause, terrorism, was dismissed by the three countries involved in the search and recovery effort. So far, Brazil's defense ministry has found parts of the plane scattered over an enormous area.
Really, no matter what airline it is that has something like this happen, we kind of feel like an extended family. You know, we feel like, you know, for the crew members that were lost, we kind of feel like a distant family member is gone.
Brazil is currently holding 3 days of mourning. There were 228 people on board the plane that left Rio de Janeiro headed for Paris. If no survivors are found, it will be the worst aviation disaster since 2001. Brian Thomas, The Associated Press.
That's just a small amount of the media relating to the curious crash of Flight 447. We could spend a whole lot of time on that, but we don't have time right here. The other big, suspicious, mysterious story, and again, I'm not one to jump out and say, oh, it's a conspiracy, oh, there's something. But when you look for some of the red flags, we're seeing them in spades in both the 447 story as well as the apparent suicide of the star of Kung Fu and Kill Bill, David Carradine. So this report from Copycat Effect, Lauren Coleman's fantastic blog, following the memes, the clusters, the copycat effect. Thai police have reported that actor David Carradine, 72, has been found dead with a rope around his neck. This is how the news is being broadcast globally. On June 4th, 2009, Carradine was found dead in his room at the Park Nai Lert Hotel in Junfan Mulay, Bangkok, Thailand. The initial police report indicated that Carradine had died by suicide by hanging himself. He was found by a hotel maid sitting in a wardrobe closet with a rope around his neck and body. David Carradine was, of course, the star of the 1970s television series Kung Fu. He was also Woody Guthrie in Bound for Glory, and also the title villain of Tarantino's Kill Bill films. The United States Embassy in Bangkok noted that Carradine had been found dead in his hotel suite in Bangkok, where he was working on a movie. We have links in here to the Washington Times, the Washington Post, the BBC, and ABC News on the apparent suicide of David Carradine.
Sad news in Hollywood today. Oscar-nominated actor David Carradine has died. The 72-year-old star, best known for his role as Kwai Chang Kane from the 70s show Kung Fu, was in Bangkok shooting a film when he was found dead by the movie's producer in his hotel room. Carradine's manager, Chuck Binder, tells Fox News that his client's death is shocking and sad. He was full of life, always wanting to work, a great person. Carradine, who is survived by his widow, Annie Bierman, was nominated as best actor for his role in Bound for Glory. His most recent career highlight was playing Bill in Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill. While it is rumored Carradine may have committed suicide, details are still developing.
That's just a quick blurb from CelebTV.com. But an interesting comment at the bottom of this post mentions the Carradine curse, the Carradine family curse. And they give a link to a film that's over on Mail Cafe, and I have not been able to watch that yet, set up an account and yada yada, but interesting nonetheless to note the Carradine curse. The latest that I have, and I pulled this link is not posted up yet. This is from the Associated Press. This is from 20 minutes ago. Carradine death may be accidental. The body of American actor David Carradine, best known for the 1970s television series Kung Fu, was found in a hotel room closet with a rope tied to his neck and genitals, and his death may have been caused by accidental suffocation. The 72-year-old actor's body was discovered in the hotel. Police initially said they suspected suicide, though Carradine's associates had questioned that theory, and authorities later said no suicide note was found in his room. Lieutenant General Warapong Chupreka told reporters that Carradine was found with a rope tied around his genitals and another rope around his neck. The two ropes were tied together, he said. It is unclear whether he committed suicide or not, or he died of suffocation or heart failure. This report goes on, but we'll note, jumping down a little bit, that Carradine may have died attempting a sex act known as autoerotic asphyxiation, cutting off oxygen to the brain for sexual arousal. The practice is said to result in a form of giddiness and euphoria similar to alcohol or drug intoxication that enhances the sexual experience. Let's see. No, they don't. I was just curious, as long as we were mentioning accidental deaths and autoerotic asphyxiation, if they would perhaps mention the late lead singer of NXS, Michael Hutchence, supposedly died of autoerotic asphyxiation gone wrong. However, busted lip, busted hand, contusions on his back. The interesting thing about this apparent quote-unquote suicide of David Carradine and the mysterious crash of Flight 447. These two events mirror in many, many ways the two main topics of discussion in my recent interview with Alex Constantine, not to keep harping on that. Alex and I talked about Flight 3407. You recall it went down in New York, February 12th. Killed Beverly Eckert, 9/11 widow and activist, and a host of others, and a host of other questions, and intelligence connections, and big pharma, and money, and military, and the cover-up. The other thing we talked about in reference to Constantine's book, Covert War Against Rock, is the supposed suicide of Michael Hutchence. So these two stories now mirror pretty much on the nose those other Flight 3407 to Flight 447, Michael Hutchence to David Carradine. I don't have all the answers. I'm just posing questions for you. I don't know. Hopefully, we will find out much more about these two. But there's so much more to get into, and we're going to have to keep moving. And again, keeping an eye on Google News. I do see that severe storms move north across Oregon. We also have a note, of course, on Obama and his Middle Eastern holiday. But we're going to get to that in just a little bit. Geopolitics. the Tiananmen anniversary, Israeli terror drills, and more, and so much more. The first thing we'll note from Threat Level, the Tiananmen Square anniversary will not be tweeted. Of course, a play on the revolution will not be televised. Expanding on that, again from Threat Level, censorship on the Tiananmen anniversary cripples Chinese net. June 4th, that's yesterday, folks, isn't just the 20th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre in China. It's also known as Chinese Internet Maintenance Day. That's because many Chinese services are facing so much pressure from the government to keep their users from talking about that bloody day. They're just shutting down comment boards or claiming their services are closed for unspecified upgrades. For instance, fanfu.com, F-A-N-F-O-U.com, a popular Twitter-like service, shut its doors for the week and says it'll reopen on June 6th. Meanwhile, the so-called Great Firewall of China, greatfirewallofchina.org, is blocking Twitter, human rights groups' websites, and blogging services hosted outside of China. At a well-timed panel at the Computers Freedom and Privacy Conference in D.C. Thursday, Hu Yong, a popular Chinese blogger and associate professor at Peking University, quoted EFF co-founder, that's the Electronic Frontier Foundation, I believe, EFF.org. But Hu Yong quoted John Gilmore's famous saying that the internet interprets censorship as damage and routes around it. If he lived in China, he couldn't say this. The other note from The Guardian, and again, the way things are insane, and we'll cover so many stories that, again, in the past, these would be the full topics of conversation. Most of these stories are also huge. General Motors bankrupt. Well, yeah. But we'll get to that. But we note from The Guardian, Tiananmen Square, 20 years ago, where briefly anything seems possible. However, we do have a report from Al Jazeera on the Tiananmen anniversary.
It's just another Thursday morning here in Beijing, and we're going to try in a moment to walk up to Tiananmen, which is just down there on the left-hand side. And we know that already this morning the authorities have stopped several television crews, and there are as many as 300 or 400 plainclothes policemen on the square itself. We're going to try and get as close as we can and see how sensitive the Chinese government is about the 20th anniversary of the Tiananmen protests.
记者，可以，哎，不要，不要，不要，不要，干嘛？我们是记者，你看我的记者证。不要，不要。We're
being stopped from filming quite clearly. We haven't even got close to the square, and they're obstructing us considerably. There's very little we can do. I've got an official pass here from the Chinese government that allows me to film. But we're being quite. The plainclothes policeman. We obviously aren't going to be allowed to get any closer to Tiananmen, the authorities obstructing us considerably.
The umbrellas were out and not a hint of rain. A strange and farcical way to commemorate a day when so many people died. But it wasn't just the media who were being stopped. Anyone the police thought suspicious, who caught their eye, who might be planning a spontaneous protest on the square. This, they were especially keen to keep under wraps. Permits were needed, said the police. Permits we'd already applied for and been told were unnecessary. After a lengthy process where names and passports were taken, everyone was turned away.
Well, it's quite clear we're not going to be allowed to get any closer to Tiananmen. But the police and the plainclothes security also stopping ordinary Chinese people, people who look very much down on their luck, and that's because they're incredibly concerned that anyone could launch a protest, however small, on the square today. And it's very clear that even after 20 years, the Chinese Communist Party is still incredibly sensitive about Tiananmen Square. Tony Cheng, Al Jazeera, Beijing.
Again, my friends, huge stories that I cannot do justice to here on Media Monarchy, the radio show. However, if we jump over to Israel, with a massive amount of links for you to Press TV, to MSNBC, to Australian News, Spacewar.com, Haaretz.com, but this original piece from NPR at least the text that we're going to read, not the clip that we'll hear in just a moment. Israel preps for possible Iran missile attack. Israel has begun its largest ever national drill to test the response of emergency services to potential missile attacks, bombings, and natural disasters. The aim is to make sure the country is prepared for attacks. The Israeli military confirmed this is the first time the army will be simulating strikes from Iran.
Sounds of panic and scenes of disaster as Israeli soldiers search for victims in the rubble of a building hit by a missile in Kiryat Gat, just 15 miles from the border with Gaza. This time it's just an exercise, part of Turning Point 3, the largest emergency drill ever mounted in Israel. As sirens wail across the country, millions of schoolchildren practice evacuation to bomb shelters or secure places. For 5 days, army, police and emergency services are simulating a combined missile, terrorist and chemical weapons attack on three fronts, perhaps from missiles like these displayed in Iran.
This is an annual exercise. It's happening for the third time, and it will continue to happen as long as there is a threat on Israel.
Gerald Steinberg, professor of political science at Bar-Ilan University, says Israelis are used to living in a war zone.
So they'll continue to do this as long as there's a threat to Israel. As we generally note Israel's MO, they make sure that there's always a threat or a perceived threat to Israel. So the sidebar mention to this for the flip-flop for the other side of a fake coin. Iran says mosque bombers worked for the U.S. Iranian officials last Friday accused the U.S. of hiring those behind a suicide bombing of a Shiite mosque in southeastern Iran that killed 23 people and linked the attack to next month's presidential vote. We will, of course, note that it is now common knowledge that the U.S. funds terrorists from inside Iran. Covert activities include support for the minority Ahwazi, Arab, and Baluchi groups and other dissident organizations. United States Special Operations Forces have been conducting cross-border operations from southern Iraq with Bush's authorization since 2007. There's more on that from, of course, Seymour Hersh. And we're going to mention more about Iran and possible false flag actions in just a little bit. But if we move to The Guardian, UK admits use of controversial enhanced blast weapons in Afghanistan. British pilots in Afghanistan are firing an increasing number of quote-unquote enhanced blast, that's thermobaric weapons, designed to kill everyone in buildings they strike. Since the start of this year, more than 20 of the U.S.-designed missiles, which have what is officially described as a blast fragmentation warhead, have been fired by pilots of British Apache helicopters. A total of 20 were also fired last year after they were bought by the Ministry of Defense from the Americans last May. A headline from Times Online, photos expose Sri Lanka's lie about civilian deaths. That may tie in to the end of the Tamil Tigers. But more on the threatiganda and DEFCON questions about North Korea. We have an important piece from The Telegraph where Gates warns North Korea. Robert Gates, and just, you know, I love to mention whenever we mention Robert Gates that during, if you recall, if you're a somewhat longtime listener back in January during the inauguration, you'll remember that we pointed out that Robert Gates was the quote-unquote designated successor. He was nowhere near Washington. He was in an undisclosed location in case nukes killed Washington, we would have had an unelected military leader. Planting seeds. But from The Telegraph, Robert Gates, the U.S. Defense Secretary, delivered a stark warning to North Korea last Saturday, declaring that America would not stand idly by while the regime threatened to wreak destruction with nuclear weapons. Instead, Mr. Gates urged tough sanctions against North Korea and pledged that Washington would not accept its position of a nuclear arsenal. Kim Jong-il's regime was, he said, starving its own people in order to develop weapons of mass destruction. In other news, pot calls kettle black. Mr. Gates' unequivocal message came during a conference of Asian defense ministers in Singapore. In his audience were reps from the countries most threatened by Mr. Kim, South Korea and Japan. There was also a delegation from China, North Korea's only ally. Mr. Gates said, quote, "Dependent on the charity of the international community to alleviate the hunger and suffering of its people, North Korea's leadership has chosen to focus the North's limited energies and resources on a reckless and ultimately self-destructive quest for nuclear weapons. The policy of the United States has not changed. Our goal is complete and verifiable denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and we will not accept North Korea as a nuclear weapons state." If you'll recall, way back last week on the episode, we noted, of course, that Donald Rumsfeld, when he was on the board of A.B. Brown, helped North Korea get the weapons. It ties in with AQCon and the whole thing we always do. We arm the country so we can blow them up later. Again, always quoting Bill Hicks, he says we're like Shane, where you throw the gun down in front of the little sheep herder and say, "Pick up the gun." Last few headlines on the geopolitics tip. Russian village accidentally shelled. That's from military.com. The OAS has lifted a ban on Cuba after 47 years. That would be the Organization of American States. On Wednesday, lifted a decades-old ban on Cuba's participation in the group and cleared the way for the island's return despite initial U.S. objections. Hugo Chavez has accused the U.S. of an assassination plot. That's from bignewsnetwork.com as well as other places. That story does seem to have a couple of legs and is moving and growing. And the last note from The Guardian exposed the ugly face of BNP's leaders. That would be UK neo-Nazis on Facebook. And yes, they do have some political power. As I've said, we've noted for what is now quite a few months the just general sense of growing chaos. And it's what I've basically been referring to as murder and mayhem. The murder and mayhem meme. And what we're going to begin with, I believe, again, as I've said on this show for now the last year plus, so about a year ago, when it was looking pretty much that Obama was the ordained one, I said, when and if the Democrats come back into power, we're going to see the shift back to the days, just like Clinton era, with homegrown terrors and heartland errors and the McVeighs and the Wacos and the militias and the anti-abortion nuts and all of that. We've seen it instantly, already, in spades. And again, we point out, we're completely nonpartisan here. Both sides are completely bought and paid for, completely complicit, or they're all pretty much blackmailable, or they're maniacal, power-hungry freaks. Not freaks. Again, I don't believe that there's one singular power at the top. I think a smarter way sometimes to think about it is that they're basically either A, multi-generational serial killers, as Richard Andrew Grove has pointed out. I also like to think of them as gangsters. You know, gangsters sometimes have to bump each other off as they're kind of fighting for territory, but they're never going to do anything to call into question their whole game. Just like the left, just like the right, just like the Gambinos, just like the Genoveses. Gangsters. But we've returned to the days of homegrown terrorism, and they're amping it up, and we will see some ridiculous connections and accusations being made, just like we have for the last several weeks, whether it's the MIAC reports and these threat assessments that basically say, you're the terrorist. Abortion doctor George Tiller gunned down at Kansas church. This original report from the Deutsche Press Agency, but of course links to the Associated Press, the BBC, McClatchy, KansasCity.com, the Washington Times, and on and on. A Kansas physician at the center of the U.S. controversy over abortion was shot to death Sunday morning as he walked into a church in the town of Wichita. George Tiller, 67, one of the country's few physicians who performed late-term abortions, had survived a previous attack in 1993, where I will sidebar mention. That attack in 1993 was by a woman whose name I don't have in front of me, but she is from Grants Pass, Oregon. She shot him in both arms. The other sidebar mention is even in the local Oregonian, when they were covering this story, they gave a little timeline of, you know, recent violent, you know, abortion, anti-abortion related violence. And I pointed out to coworkers, I said, look at this timeline. And when did all these happen? Save for one failed and fumbling attempt where nothing really happened. I believe that was maybe in Texas in 2007. Every other one was during the Clinton administration. So one party's in favor, one party's out of favor. When your phony party is out of favor, you get really energized and you listen to the talk radio from that side and yada yada. Continuing. Police said they had detained a possible suspect found driving a car that met the description of the one that raced away after the shooting at the Reformation Lutheran Church in the town of about 380,000. This according to the Kansas City Star. The attack came at about 10 a.m. after services had begun. Tiller's murder brought an outpouring of condemnation from both sides of the heated abortion debate. Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, said Tiller's murder sent a chill down the spines of the brave and courageous providers and other professionals who are part of reproductive health centers that serve women across the country. Tiller's clinic has been targeted by bombs, shootings, vandalism over the years. Kansas is a stronghold of the anti-abortion movement, from which groups of activists fan out across the country to protest. Again, as we've stated many times before, that when Obama would get into office, we would switch back to the days of Waco's, McVeigh's, and the false left-right paradigm of abortion, gay marriage, and guns.
Late-term abortion doctor George Tiller has been gunned down during services at his church in Wichita, Kansas. Tiller's attorney says he was shot as he served as an usher during Sunday morning services at Reformation Lutheran Church. He says Tiller's wife was in the choir at the time of the shooting. Stunned parishioners were seen consoling each other. Community members are reeling from the violence at a place of worship.
Inside of the church, this is just really disgusting. I am totally in shock. I don't believe in abortion, but I don't believe that we have the right to take anyone's life, including Dr. Tiller.
The prominent advocate for abortion rights was 67. National anti-abortion groups had long focused on Tiller, whose Women's Health Care Services Clinic is one of just three in the nation where abortions are performed after the 21st week of pregnancy. This fellow churchgoer can't believe Tiller was targeted at his place of worship.
I mean, it's one thing for them to protest outside a church, but it's another, I mean, to do an act of crime. I mean, this is his only place of peace, and for them to come and do this, it's horrible.
This man, though, isn't entirely surprised Tiller was shot.
Doing what he does, no, it doesn't. Retribution, I guess. I don't know.
Tiller's clinic has repeatedly been the site of protests for about two decades. His clinic was bombed in 1995, and in 1993, he was shot and wounded in both arms by a protester. Myra Lopez, The Associated Press.
I know that you are hungry for knowledge and information regarding the incident yesterday that claimed the life of Dr. George Tiller, a Wichita physician. As is the case in all investigations of homicide, the first priority is for law enforcement to conduct its investigation. When the law enforcement officers are at a position to bring the case to the district attorney's office, it would be at that time that we would conduct what's called a felony review process, where we look at all of the facts and circumstances of the case and make determinations as to what charges, if any, might be filed against a particular individual. At this particular point in time, the law enforcement investigation continues, and the case has not yet been presented to the office of the district attorney for any determinations. It is not, there will be no activity today within the court system. Under the constitutional law and cases that are applicable, the state has 48 hours in which to make determinations of an individual who is or may be in custody. And we take the time period and our obligations very seriously.
just a couple quick media clips put together about the death of abortion doctor George Tiller. Another one from the Deutsche Press Agency: Obama puts spotlight on murder of abortion doctor. U.S. President Barack Obama condemned the murder of an abortion doctor who was shot down inside a Wichita church early Sunday, throwing the national spotlight on the decades-old bitter struggle over the issue. Obama, a center-left Democrat who supports access to legal abortion, took the unusual step of commenting on the killing. Earlier this month, he signaled his willingness to grapple with the issue in a graduation speech at Notre Dame and appealed for both sides to work together to help women facing unplanned pregnancies. And now, of course, the unfortunate updates. And the first we'll mention briefly is the history and connections of Tiller's killer being overlooked.
We begin tonight with new and worrying details about the murder of Kansas Dr. George Tiller. Today, confirmation that Dr. Tiller's alleged assassin, Scott Roeder, was in contact with the extreme anti-abortion group Operation Rescue in the months leading up to Dr. Tiller's murder. Up to this point, Operation Rescue has maintained that Scott Roeder was not a member of their organization, but evidence of a link between the two was first inadvertently spotted in local television footage, has now been followed up and confirmed. Check this out. Immediately after the Tiller shooting, when Scott Roeder was pulled over by police, local TV footage from KMBC captured a glimpse of a small note that was on the dashboard of Mr. Roeder's car. The note read, "Cheryl, Op Rescue," and it had a phone number on it. Cheryl at Op Rescue, we can now tell you, is Cheryl Sullinger. She is employed by the anti-abortion group as their senior policy advisor. Ms. Sullinger has now admitted that she did, in fact, have multiple phone conversations with Scott Roeder before Dr. Tiller was killed. Those conversations were about Dr. Tiller.
That's just a brief bit from Rachel Maddow, and it's Scott Roeder, R-O-E-D-E-R. A few of the other updates on this story: could abortion doctor's murder become an issue in Sotomayor's confirmation process, she of the gonna-be Supreme Court? Nebraska physician vows to keep Tiller's abortion clinic open. That's from McClatchy, and the previous was from ABC News. FBI blew the chance to stop accused Tiller murderer. That is from Raw Story. That ties in with the Maddow clip we just heard. Why a Kansas district attorney can't seek the death penalty in the Tiller case, and the suspect, Scott Roeder, held in the shooting, can't be held without bail. Those are two interesting, I believe, legal loopholes that I don't quite know all about, but you can read more from Kansas.com and McClatchy. I did get an interesting comment very quickly on this posting from Deborah J.M. Smith of InformingChristians.com, and it basically looks as though it's a quick form letter that they went around and posted up to all the blogs where they basically say, you know, we don't like that this happened, but tough. We're at the top of the hour. I should make the brief mention because we're going to have to pick up the pace here, folks, if we're going to get through all this horrible news. You're listening to the 126th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 5th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority in Southeast Portland, Oregon, praradio.org, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, K-Rock's Radio 1, The Maiden Voyage, broadcasting MediaMonarchy.com live, K-Rock's 92.3 FM in Casper, Wyoming, as well as worldwide on the web, KRocksRadio1.com. Again, thanks to Free Radio Olympia 98.5 and KBFR BoulderFreeRadio.com 93.9 and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And it continues. More murder and mayhem. Arkansas recruitment and the Cleveland Greyhound. First, from Fox News, two shot, one killed by a gunman at an Arkansas military recruiting center.
You are looking at the man police say opened fire on two soldiers at a military recruiting office in Little Rock this morning. Good evening, and thanks for joining us. I'm Scott Inman.
And I'm Christina Munoz. It happened outside the Army-Navy Career Center on Rodney Parham just after 10 this morning. The suspect is 23-year-old Abdul Hakim Mujahid Muhammad and is behind bars tonight at the Pulaski County Jail. Amanda Manat is live from the police department with the latest. Amanda?
Well, Christina, Muhammad was taken to jail just a few hours ago. Police say he apparently targeted military personnel because of his political and religious beliefs. ABC News has learned Muhammad just returned from a trip to Yemen and had apparently already become the target of an FBI investigation surrounding a passport issue.
Shots rang out at this Little Rock shopping center shortly after 10 o'clock Monday morning. The victims, two U.S. Army soldiers standing outside this Army-Navy recruiting center. 23-year-old Private William Long of Conway was killed. 18-year-old Private Quentin Ezekiel seriously injured when police say a suspect in a black SUV drove by opening fire. A homeowner across the street describes what happened.
I see him every day. They're just standing outside talking or smoking a cigarette, and this guy just pulls up and takes six, seven shots and pulls out as fast as he can go.
Minutes later, police stopped 23-year-old Abdul Hakim Mujahid Muhammad along Interstate 630, finding three weapons in his vehicle, including the assault rifle officers say was used in the attack. A bomb squad was called to investigate a suspicious package in the truck. No explosives were found. Muhammad was taken into custody and his Little Rock apartment searched. Police say the suspect, formerly known as Carlos Bledsoe, had lived in Little Rock just a few months and had recently converted to Islam. Investigators say religious and political views likely sparked the shooting. The Little Rock police chief says it does not appear Muhammad has ties to any other group or individuals.
We have no indication that this individual did anything other than act alone of his own accord. And it is our belief that he acted with a specific intent to target military personnel and did so unilaterally and did so with intent today and today only.
Now, Muhammad is being charged with capital murder along with 15 counts of committing a terroristic act. He's expected to be in court tomorrow morning. Live in Little Rock, Amanda Manash.
So it's lone gunman, not Al-Qaeda. But I made the reference, and the text that I read prior to that clip was from FoxNews.com with also links to military.com, but that clip, of course, was from ABC7 out of Arkansas. The update from the Associated Press: accused Arkansas shooter had more weapons, a Muslim convert, and again, you know, the glee that they can point that out. A Muslim convert who pleaded not guilty to killing a soldier outside a recruiting center had the firepower to take out many more while on a mission to, quote, kill as many people in the army as he could, police said. Abdul Hakim Muhammad's pickup had Molotov cocktails, three guns, and ammo. More. Three wounded after gunman fires shots into a Greyhound bus. This again from Fox News. A gunman fired shots into a Greyhound bus in Cleveland Monday, wounding three passengers, Fox8.com reported. The gunman reportedly opened fire at approximately 3 a.m. Monday in downtown Cleveland. The bus driver told the police he heard a smashing sound before passengers began screaming. And then the updates. 19 years, at least, for murder handed down to the legendary and now infamous music producer Phil Spector. He of the Wall of Sound, the man behind the more or less the sound of the 60s girl groups. So that's a bizarre story. He, of course, produced some of John Lennon's last work and was reportedly always playing and threatening people with guns. And I believe there are also photos. So Phil Spector will not be seen again. Those come from Raw Story as well as Wiki News. UK couple made suicide leap with the body of their son after his death from meningitis. That's from The Guardian. An Israeli woman survives being run over by a train in a suicide attempt. That is from Wiki News. The reports basically say she got out of her car, she walked down, laid down on the tracks, the train went over her, and she got up, dusted herself off, and got back in her car and drove away. A toy gun led to a lockdown at Princeton University. That's from the Washington Times. Muslim robbery victim consoles thief in New York and helps him convert. We have to follow this. This is from the Deutsche Press Agency. And again, I think this can help kind of balance out the previous story about those crazy Muslim converts. They want to kill everybody. This is in, of course, New York City. Role reversal at gunpoint, where basically a guy tried to rob a store. He failed because, of course, the store owner got the jump on him. And the thief broke down in tears, said he's got no money, his family's hungry, started begging. So the shopkeeper, Mohammed Sohail, gave the guy bread and $40 and performed a prayer declaring him a Muslim. And he went to go get the guy a jug of milk, came back, the guy was gone. Just as I thought, you know, I was kind of surprised that George Tiller was at church. You know, you make the assumption, oh, he's, you know, he performs abortion. You know, it's like, well, don't make such snap judgments. It's not always so cut and dry. There is a strange bit, and again, these all tie in with all the mysterious, curious crashes of planes. From the Houston Chronicle, there are two reports. Liberty County, Texas, and the FAA to discuss report of rocket near a plane. The update, mystery at 13,000 feet. What did the jet pilot see over Liberty, Texas? But we don't have time to go into it, and the page won't load anyway. Again, noting those strange memes of missing planes, white, bright flashes in the sky. I believe I saw somewhere someone searching something about Air France Flight 447 in reference to perhaps HARP. Missing plane search called off. This from the BBC. A search and rescue operation for an aircraft that went missing on its way to Kent has been called off. The missing civilian two-seater plane set off from Cambridge on Wednesday morning on the 100-mile trip to the Lydd Airport near Romney Marsh. Gone. And we will note that it makes a little more sense that a two-seater can go missing. An Airbus? I don't know. Another update on Flight 3407 by way of Alex Constantine, but it's written by James Rader of Open Salon, casting blame on the pilots of 3407. And again, that seems to be where the story is supposed to be wrapped up with a bow on top. It's the pilot's fault. But again, I implore you to check out the recent interview with Alex Constantine to go way, way, way deep into Flight 3407. A study says videos help people prepare for end-of-life care. That's from Time Magazine, and you got to click the link to see the photo of an elderly guy sitting in a wheelchair with a laptop. But it does bring up the ugly specter of euthanasia and eugenics and all that. Fury at Aussie schools mock hanging from the BBC. A sad video report. A Virginia boy playing baseball died after being struck by lightning. An Alabama husband has admitted to killing his wife on their honeymoon in an Australian scuba death. And finally, on the more murder and mayhem meme, a bus fire killed 24 in a Chinese city. Moving on. Getting out of the murder and mayhem and into the mistakes. U.S. mistakenly reveals civilian nuclear sites. And listed up at the very top of the page is the link for you to download the 13-meg PDF, the list of sites, locations, facilities, and activities declared to the International Atomic Energy Agency. But from the Deutsche Press Agency, the U.S. government has mistakenly published a highly confidential report with information about civilian nuclear sites and programs. The 266-page document, which reportedly also contained maps showing the location of fuel stockpiles for nuclear weapons, was published on the government printing office website after the White House had sent it to Congress for review. The Times said the document was withdrawn from the website after it inquired about it. Its publication also triggered discussion Monday when it first appeared inside the scientific community about possible dangers of the disclosures. Obama had sent the document, which was marked highly confidential, but not classified, to Congress in early May for review before it was sent to the International Atomic Energy Agency in Vienna. They're the UN nuclear watchdog, you know, the ones that said there are no weapons of mass destruction. Those guys. It's not clear how the document arrived at the printing office, the New York Times reported. The report contained no military info about the stockpile of nuclear weapons or defense systems protecting them. It just listed all the sites of civilian nuclear reactors and weapon laboratories. The document was first noted by Stephen Aftergood, a security expert at the Federation of American Scientists in Washington, FAS.org, who called it a one-stop shop for information on U.S. nuclear systems. He noted the publication in his newsletter, Secrecy News. There are, of course, links in there to FAS.org, as well to that aforementioned New York Times, as well as military.com. And again, thanks to sunshinepress.org and the always controversial WikiLeaks.org. U.S. mistakenly reveals civilian nuclear sites. I guess we could play the game and figure out which dangerous weapon stockpile is closest to you. But now it's time for the cyberspace war. And again, over the last several months, we've been noting the rise in the prepping of what we said several weeks ago, that it looks like they're prepping us either for some sort of cyber event, some kind of hack attack, power grid event, or some kind of bio attack. Well, we got a bio attack in the form of H1N1. But the prepping and the threataganda and all just the bizarre swirlings around anything related to the web or space weapons, inner space and outer space. The cyberspace war. Obamasiah meets the cyber czar. The first we'll note from Kurt Nemo, Obama's promise to trash the Constitution as the White House creates new cyberspace watchdog. Again, from the Deutsche Press Agency, the White House last Friday moved to stem escalating cybercrime as threats to internet security and wireless technology grow at an alarming pace. Obama announced the creation of a White House office that will coordinate protection of government security, financial systems, air traffic control programs, and other systems. What could possibly go wrong? The problem is the most serious economic and security challenge that faces the nation, Obama said. In addition, the Pentagon is reportedly planning to create a new military command for cyberspace. But defense officials have not yet presented the plan to the Obamasiah. Obamasiah meets the cyber czar.
The U.S. may soon get a cyber czar. President Obama is expected to announce his decision to appoint a senior White House official who will be in charge of protecting the nation's networks. It's aimed at preventing cyber attacks on various sectors, and the move's already caused a public debate over whether it will evolve into a surveillance system. That's the key question, maybe. Joining me now live in Washington, D.C., Dina Gustovsky. Dina, hi there. So what is the senior cyber official going to have then?
Well, internet users across the board are really asking themselves, is this slowly but surely becoming a culture of surveillance? Now, the debate becomes, is this a national security issue, or is this a way for the federal government to really snoop on internet users to look at what they're reading, what they're watching, what they're sharing? Now, interestingly enough, there's a bill that's making its way through Congress, and if this bill is going to be successful, it would basically result in a major power shift over the internet from private users, private companies, big and small, to the federal government. So the government would have unprecedented power over the internet. Now, Barack Obama, throughout his campaign, said, look, I'm going to make cybersecurity a top priority in my administration. So perhaps it's no surprise that he kind of wants to appoint this cyber Superman who's going to report directly. And this guy can basically pick up the phone and call the president at any time were something to happen. So what we see here is the Obama administration are really taking some drastic measures here when it comes to this issue.
Okay, so I promise it is manifesto, but what's the urgency of doing doing it so soon. Is there any particular security issues that have come to light lately?
Yes, well, U.S. research and analysis has basically shown that if a full-blown internet crisis were to happen right now, the U.S. government may be able to deal with it because there is no central cyber commander, no cyber superman, if you will. And so government officials are desperate what they call a cyber Katrina. Basically, you have all these different fragmented departments of the government and different bureaucracies who don't share information with each other. So were there to be a major internet crisis, they wouldn't really be able to come up with a concerted response. And that's really what government officials are trying to avoid. They're trying to have this central commander so if something were to happen, all respond in the same way.
Geez, there's a lot to break down in that one. But as always, good, probing, interesting work from RussiaToday.com. As they noted and called it a cyber Katrina. So it might be a cyber Katrina where basically they were warned about something that was going to happen. And then when it did happen, they flounder around and Bush plays the guitar and they don't do anything and it's martial law. So it could be like that. Or others referred to it as basically an E-9-11. So that would be something where they set it into motion. Now, whether the people who would pull it off know what they're a part of, I have no idea. But as we've noted throughout seemingly the last several decades of history, any time we declare a war on something, you're only going to see more of it. So expect to see tons more cyber hack attacks. That's pretty much all there is. They declare a war on drugs than ever. War on terror, more terror than ever. Some of the updates and related notes all swirl around Obama unveiling the new cybersecurity strategy. So we have reports from FCW. We've got Obama outlining the coordinated cybersecurity plan from the New York Times, the national priority from the Washington Times, the office announced from DefenseTalk.com, the Washington Post, Wired, and Threat Level. But on different notes, again from Threat Level, Obama says government sanctions unwarranted in spy case. Obama says new cyber czar won't spy on the net. And from Raw Story, Obama's new war doctrine is cyber dominance. From Bloomberg, of course, the cybersecurity chief will secure networks, Obama says. Time says on the cybersecurity speech that Obama gave, why bother? I don't know if their point was to say if it's about the internet, just post up a YouTube video, but regardless. From RechargeNews.com, Obama pledges $467 million for U.S. geothermal and solar studies. We've noted before, both from new appointees to the Obama administration, as well as coming from the Council on Foreign Relations, geoengineering the atmosphere. But we don't have time for that. Ultimate lock picker hacks the Pentagon, beats corporate security for fun and profit, which relates to the disturbing report from the New York Times on May 31st. Contractors vie for plum work, hacking for the U.S. The government's urgent push into cyber warfare has set off a rush among the biggest military companies for billions of dollars in new defense contracts. The exotic nature of the work, coupled with the deep recession, is enabling companies to attract top young talent that would once have gone to Silicon Valley. And the race to develop weapons that defend against or initiate computer attacks has given rise to thousands of hacker soldiers within the Pentagon who can blend the new capabilities into the nation's war planning. Nearly all of the largest military companies, our good friends at Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon, have major cyber contracts with the military and intelligence agencies. The companies have been moving quickly to lock up the relatively small number of experts with the training and creativity to block the attacks and design countermeasures. They've been buying smaller firms, financing academic research, and running advertisements for cyber ninjas. At a time when other industries are shedding workers, the changes are manifesting themselves in highly classified labs where computer geeks in their 20s like to joke that they're hackers with security clearances. And their souls have been sold. They've bought the lie, hook, line, and sinker. Again, as Bill Hicks would say, you're working for Raytheon or Northrop Grumman. You're sucking Satan's cock. You're off the list. U.S. cybersecurity plan poses new war threats and, of course, attacks on democratic rights. That's from the World Socialist website. However, breaking it down from Paul Joseph Watson and Kurt Nemo, cybersecurity framework for total government regulation and control. We even noted the report from Mother Jones a little bit ago. It was like, should Obama have the on-off switch to the internet? The Obama administration's new cybersecurity system will only make the internet more vulnerable to attack while creating the framework for a massively upgraded government surveillance grid that will control and regulate every aspect of our daily lives through the implementation of smart technology. Obama's announcement of the new cybersecurity grid dovetails with recently introduced Senate bill, Cybersecurity Act of 2009, that would hand the Prez the power to shut down the internet entirely in the event of a cybersecurity crisis. There's more from that report, and it's all disturbing. And again, does Obama own the internet? What's he protecting you from? What is it his business? What is it the government's business in the first place? You can almost say, if, you know, my shit gets hacked, that's my fault. As we'll note in a few minutes, if businesses go bad, that's their fault. But now, of course, the state owns all. We own General Motors and now the internet. So some of the updates and headlines that we'll blast through really quickly. NASA's new solar cycle prediction, of course, the 2012 solar cycle 24 coming up. New Twitter feature, body counts from Danger Room. That's a disturbing new thing from the military, posting the body counts of all of our international wars of aggression. 600-foot jellyfish crop circle found in Oxfordshire field. That does relate to the cyberspace war, as it all relates to some possible cyber event, space event, fake alien event, Project Blue Beam, fake rapture, War of the Worlds, PSYOP. It's not aliens. DARPA recruits bees to find landmines. The mysterious chip is the CIA's latest weapon against al-Qaeda targets hiding in Pakistan's tribal belt. We've noted that mysterious chip, and I think others have even asked, is that the secret weapon that CIA cutout Bob Woodward mentioned several months ago? But even more updates, sci-fi writers dream up contingency plans for homeland stupidity, or as I ask, is it really the other way around? Who's planning ideas with whom? Dean Hagland, star of The Lone Gunman, the spinoff from The X-Files, with an interview with Alex Jones, said there was contact with the CIA about show content. So, of course, their pilot episode was about hijacking commercial jets with remote control to crash them into the towers. You know. Google's influence grows in the White House. That's from Politico. Obama resurrects Bush's failed cybersecurity scam. Again from Alex Constantine. From Tom Burkhart and Global Research and Anti-Fascist Calling, Obama's cybersecurity plan, bring in the contractors. This would be the private military contractors. The Empire Strikes Back, US-UK prepare to fight back against Eastern hackers. That's from The Guardian. DHS won't lose cybersecurity authority, says the nominee to be the cyber czar. That's from FCW. Napolitano names senior cybersecurity officials. Homeland Security naming officials, those all coming from Information Week and Federal Computer Week. But from Threat Level, asking the important question, is the hacking threat to national security overblown? Guarding the nation's computer systems from KansasCity.com, judge tosses telecom spy suits. That's again from Threat Level, and that's again to note that Obama picked up Bush's battles where he left off, and that would be for immunity for the telecoms for spying on you illegally. Obama still loves the state secrets. He still loves the Patriot Act. He still loves the War of Terror, all of it. Change. An interesting, funny note, Wikipedia has banned Scientology from editing the site. That's from Wikinews as well as Raw Story. And the last note from the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner, renewable energies are lifeline for the electric grid collapse during the coming severe solar storms. That's the end of that massive post on the cyberspace war. Obama Saya meets the cyber czar. However, there's another story that perfectly ties in with a lot of this, and it's a little funny. From the Washington Post, contractors hit a DC black wire and the black vans roll up. This part happens all the time. A construction crew putting up an office building in the heart of Tyson's Corner a few years ago hit a fiber optic cable no one knew was there. This part doesn't happen all the time. Within moments, three black sport utility vehicles drove up. A half a dozen men in suits jumped out, and one said, "You just hit our line." "Whose line, you may ask?" "The guys in suits didn't say," recalled Aaron Jorgalus, whose company, Jorgalus Group, was developing the Greensboro Corporate Center on Spring Hill Road. But Jorgalus assumed that he was dealing with the federal government and that the cable in question was black wire, a severe, or rather secure, communications line used for some of the nation's most secretive intelligence gathering operations. That would be gathering intelligence about you. The construction manager was shocked. He had never seen a line get cut and people show up within seconds. Usually you got to figure out whose line it is, trying to garner that kind of response that quickly was amazing. Black wire is one of the looming perils of the massive construction that has come to Tyson's Corner, where miles and miles of secure lines are thought to serve such nearby agencies as the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI, the National Counterterrorism Center, NCTC, and a few miles away in McLean, the Criminals in Action, the Cocaine Importation Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency. After decades spent cutting through red tape to begin work on a metro rail extension and the widening of the Capitol Beltway, crews are now stirring up tons of dirt where the black lines are located. "Yeah, we heard about the black SUVs. We were warned that if they were hit, the company responsible would show up before you even had a chance to make a phone call." Contractors hit the black wire and the black vans roll up. Another interesting spook note. This, again, of course, from Alex Constantine by way of the New York Daily News. "New Yorker killed in Ethiopia in 2001 has been revealed to be a CIA spy. CIA clandestine operative Greg Wenzel, G-R-E-G-G, Wenzel, W-E-N-Z-E-L. His official cover was lifted Monday, June 1st, when it was revealed that the New Yorker killed in 2003 was a spy, not a diplomat, as he claimed. Wenzel, 33, was an operations officer who died in Ethiopia. He'd been listed as a U.S. Foreign Service officer. The cause of death was said to be a random traffic accident. The actual circumstances remain murky," Wenzel's father said. He also said his son wanted to make a difference, and he did. "He wanted to give back by joining the clandestine service, yada yada, first class after 9/11. America. Spooks and spies. One thing we will note quickly as I keep glancing at Google News and updated stories. This by way of ABC News. Feds are searching for a man allegedly on a mission to kill the president. Federal authorities in Utah search for a man who allegedly made threats against Obama. Daniel James Murray has been charged with making threats against Obama after telling a bank teller that he was part of a quote-unquote mission to kill the president. Secret Service says Murray has at least 8 registered firearms. His whereabouts are unknown. Murray entered Zion's First National Bank in St. George, Utah, May 19th to open a savings account with an $85,000 check. More probably on that in the future. However, my friends, yes, it's that ugly time again, because as the news piles up and piles up and piles up, there's no way I can post it all with context and full stories and all that. There's no, I just got to do a news purge. It's the 6-4 news purge. You ready? 9/11 updates. Prince Harry, he of the inbred royal elites, of course, the younger brother of what some say is the Antichrist, Prince William, but we're not going to go there now. Prince Harry made his Ground Zero pilgrimage. He came to New York on an official visit. Obama DOJ backs the Saudi royal family on a 9/11 lawsuit. That's from the New York Times, and that's basically defending the Saudis against having any responsibility or culpability in 9/11. Richard, your government failed you. Clark says the 9/11 trauma defense is a lie. You do have some of the insiders from the criminal Bush administration all bickering now, pointing fingers. Cheney points fingers at Clark, points fingers at Condi, and hopefully they'll all tear each other apart like sharks. Abu Hamza and more are just some of the additions to the complete 9/11 timeline as of May 31st on the fantastic historycommons.org. We have a great video from We Are Change where New York Senator Gillibrand supports a new 9/11 investigation. Add him to the list. Obama appoints a 9/11 commissioner to a post of envoy to India. And lastly, we note that Hyman Brown was not the chief engineer of the World Trade Center, as has been noted and pointed out many, many times. In an interview with Tom Brokaw, they called him the architect of the World Trade Center towers. 9/11 Visibility and 911blogger.com have the breakdown on that. But now, swine flu, bio war. There's a clip and more from Breitbart and the Associated Press where the World Health Org notes that the world is, quote, getting closer to swine flu pandemic. France considers mandatory flu vaccines. That's from InfoWars, as well as Global Research, where they point out Sarkozy's secret plan for mandatory swine flu vaccination with the documentation to prove it. Human error calls of H1N1 probed. CDC vaccine advisor pockets $29 million promoting vaccines. That's nice work if you can get it. That's from naturalnews.com. Swine flu hysteria to be launched again. That's from Lou Rockwell. And from the Washington Post, MedImmune wins key contract to develop swine flu vaccine. U.S. swine flu cases have hit all 50 states, Reuters notes. We have another close call with Obama and the swine flu. Swine flu infects U.S. official in France for Obama trip. That's from the AFP. Five powerful antiviral remedies for swine flu by way of, again, naturalnews.com. The Guardian asking the question, should immunization be compulsory? More cases of swine flu in my home state of West Virginia. That's from WVMetroNews.com. Two more schools close as 55 new cases reported in the UK, again from The Guardian. And then on just some of the other bio-war notes, an MMR jab should be compulsory for all children starting school, an expert says, again from The Guardian. A book noted from Alex Constantine, Dead Silence, Fear and Terror on the Anthrax Trail, but a disturbing one by way of InfoWars. I'm not sure what this sources back to. However, it's frightening enough to note that a new infectious disease has been spreading in large areas in China.
A new infectious disease is spreading in large areas of mainland China. Symptoms are similar to AIDS, but it spreads faster between family members, even via bodily fluids like saliva. Here's more on this story.
Mr. Lin from Yunnan province caught a disease last May, unlike anything he had seen before.
This disease destroys immunity cells just like AIDS. The lowest amount of immunity cells of some patients is only 200, mighty 400. The doctor couldn't find many antibodies, so he called it fear of AIDS disease.
Preliminary research shows that patients have symptoms of fatigue, chronic diarrhea, swollen lymph nodes, and weakened immunity. But doctors cannot find any sign of the HIV virus.
A huge number of people caught the nameless virus, but the doctors cannot make a thorough check, so they make a conclusion that it's a fear of AIDS disease. The symptoms are very much like those of AIDS.
Because the Chinese Ministry of Health doesn't recognize the disease, it has not carried out any investigation. However, patients feel very horrified and sad when they see their family members and friends become infected by coming into contact with their saliva or sweat.
We hope that media reports can pressure the relevant departments to pay more attention to the disease. Do not make any irresponsible conclusions and say it is caused by fear or psychological effect. It is a real virus. Many doctors, including doctors from Beijing, also say this is an infectious disease.
Doctors from mainland China also believe patients might catch the disease. However, the exact number of people infected remains unknown, and what the mortality rate is, and how many have died from it.
Let's end the bio-war news purge note with a nice note. Music as medicine. Doctors use tunes as treatment. And I'll throw the hat tip to my man Johnny, who's actually quietly riding shotgun here at the PRA studios. I think I'm grooming him to hopefully be a helper on foodworldorder.com. More on that in just a little bit. A couple notes on the drug war. Will Obama end the war on drugs? As we've noted, perhaps, well, he's not going to end the war on drugs. However, we've noted they might decriminalize marijuana so we can at least be comfortably high when the poo-poo hits the fan. another note on the weed from the news tribune.com. It was supposed to be a persuasive speech, and it certainly was. A student's marijuana speech ends with a flourish and a trip to jail because he lit up a joint on stage and smoked it. And they hauled his ass off. But on to the Econo crash, where again, as we've noted, some of these things, massively huge stories. Oh yeah, you know, just one of the biggest, oldest, most successful corporations in the history of this country. Yeah, they're bankrupt and the government bought them and they're selling off all their parts. Without congressional approval or legislative authority, Obama plans for government to take majority interest in General Motors.
Company that was once the world's largest automaker is now just hours away from declaring bankruptcy.
This morning's announcement by General Motors will leave automakers' stock essentially worthless. Eyewitness News reporter Susan Roberts has more on this developing news.
As General Motors steers its way through bankruptcy court, the government will pump $30 billion more into the company. That's on top of the $20 billion in taxpayer money the century-old automaker has already received.
We're very optimistic they're going to have these firms emerge stronger without government assistance going forward because they've undertaken very, very dramatic restructuring.
GM's bankruptcy plan calls for 11 plants to close while 3 will go idle. The company will also cut 34% of its workforce, leaving 21,000 people without a job.
The workers here have been under a lot of stress. They are hoping and praying that the plant survives.
That's an unfortunate event, but I also think that it's a beginning. We're going to have a stronger beginning in the car industry.
President Obama will announce his support for GM's restructuring plan later today. The Obama administration says it intends to stay out of day-to-day decisions, even though the plan will give taxpayers a 60% stake in a new company.
Our objective is to make sure we're limiting our involvement to the minimum necessary and that we get out of those involvement as quickly as we can.
The General Motors bankruptcy will be the largest industrial bankruptcy in U.S. history and the fourth largest overall. Court proceedings should last between 60 to 90 days. If successful, GM would emerge as a leaner company with a smaller workforce and fewer plants and dealerships.
That was Susan Roberts reporting. Now, GM will hold on to its four core brands, GMC, Chevrolet, Cadillac, and Buick, but it'll ditch four others.
And one of the ones it's going to ditch, we'll get to in just a second, but some of the other notes, and again, the main report from CNSNews.com, as well as MarketWatch, as well as WikiNews, but GM is going to sell Hummer to a Chinese company. That's by way of the Associated Press, and it kind of makes me think, if you recall when Anheuser-Busch was bought by InBev International, it was only when Budweiser became owned by a foreign company, did they start to put on the bottles and on the six-packs and on the 12-packs that it's the great American beer. The moment it was not American, they started to say that it was American-made. I like how that maybe ties in with Hummers and the type of folks who drive them, not to make generalizations, but I like the idea of somebody driving a Hummer and drinking a Bud and thinking they're American. GM to lose Opel, that's another one they're shedding. That's O-P-E-L. They're going to lose Opel after nurturing it through recessions and the Nazis. Oh, yeah, that would be, you know, how most of the industrial corporations all collaborated with the Nazis. IBM, Coke, all of it. But no time to go into that. A great one from Greg Palast, Grand Theft Auto, how Stevie the Rat, Steve Ratner, bankrupt General Motors. One from Global Research, Manipulation, How Financial Markets Really Work. The U.S. manufacturing sector contracts for the 16th straight month. Paul Krugman on BusinessInsider.com says inflation fear-mongering is a right-wing plot. Again, playing the phony left-right paradigm. However, when we get to what's really going on, we see Tiny Tim Geithner going to China and says the U.S. is concerned about the deficits, as I'm sure the Chinese are, as we are the largest debtor nation in the world, and they don't want, you know, us to go bankrupt. But, of course, our corrupt and illegal Federal Reserve, that's not federal, and there are no reserves, they make the money, they give it to us, charge us interest. It was supposed to stop the booms and busts, but, of course, we know it's the creature from Jekyll Island. Why the Chinese laughed at Geithner is from InfoWars. However, again, from Global Research, the big collapse could be very near. dollar declines as nation's mall reserve currency alternatives. Leaping U.S. debt hits taxpayers with 12% more red ink. More on crumbling California. We're losing California. They face budget cuts beyond draconian. State parks on the chopping block. And from hero to zero, Schwarzenegger and California's abyss. An interesting note from the Miami Herald. Foreclosed Florida homes considered for hurricane housing. And then looking abroad, Ireland set to go bust, claims economic historian. Germany blasts the powers of the Federal Reserve. And lastly, an amazingly long and sourced and disturbing article from Stephen Lindman on globalresearch.ca about Daniel Estulin's book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, and what they may be planning now. History mystery, kids. The last survivor of the Titanic has died at the age of 97. I believe she was actually a six-week-old infant on the boat, which is kind of an interesting note to that. The CIA withheld documents on the JFK assassination from President Clinton. The CIA was responsible for the assassination of JFK. That's from AmericanChronicle.com. From News Post Online, how a sleazy news story about JFK went unreported. That's, of course, about his sex and pot smoking in the White House. Celebrity pathologist Cyril Wecht, who has worked closely on the JFK case, he's been cleared in an unrelated thing about money, fraudulent, yada yada. But, of course, anytime we're talking about JFK or assassination politics, I always point you to blackopradio.com. Again, something Alex Constantine and I went over, and again, it's in his book, The Covert War Against Rock. Hendrix was murdered by his manager, says a roadie. U.S. doubles the fund for Agent Orange cleanup from the Vietnam era. You got to at least tip your hat to Obama for that. Co-pilot who bombed Nagasaki is dead. Adolf Hitler up close. New photos from Skull and Bones Life magazine. And finally, we noted a couple weeks ago, the plot for a Fourth Reich, that would be the corporate Fourth Reich, and now an obscure 1943 book reveals the German plan for world government. Moving quickly, however, one note on the media meme tip, as again, whether it's a lot of times in entertainment or politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happened, you can bet it was planned that way. The Bruno and Eminem stunt at the MTV Movie Awards was rehearsed. Even though Eminem played it like, oh, I'm mad and I storm out. It's, again, media fakery. And now it's on to Obamasiah and the Apostles of War. Again, as we've noted, it's pretty difficult to separate the previous criminal regime with the current criminal regime. However, we'll start it off with a light note. The Obama's latest date, a flight to Manhattan for dinner and a show. And Bloomberg even says, see, it's really affordable. You can come out to Broadway. And fortunately, the New York Daily News called him out and said, get real, Bloomy. In President Obama, American Muslims find a new ally. There's a funny, sort of funny clip of Cheney confusing Obama with Osama. No change you can believe in for Obama ambassadors, again, doing like they always do, appointing the biggest contributors to sweet ambassador spots. From Reuters, another lifting of the curtain of the phony left-right paradigm. Bush and Clinton joke and defend each other in Canada. And of course, we've heard Poppy Bush say, you know, Bill Clinton's like a son to me. It's WWF fakery. Ex-GOP congressman, that's Tancredo, says Sotomayor is part of the Latino KKK. Now, although that's over the top, she is a member of La Raza, which you should check out. Osama speaks as Obama lands in Saudi Arabia. Obama seeks the Saudi king's advice before his big Cairo speech. There's an interesting note from Illuminati, as well as blacklistednews.com and the great new occult healthcare symbolism from the Obama White House. Of course, always the rising sun symbolism and the caduceus and all that. Obama names a House Republican to top Army post, but a great one, a blistering one from Ted Rall. It's increasingly evident that Obama should resign. Muslim Brotherhood among invitees to the big Cairo speech from Obama. Another note on Shrub. He told a Houston journalist when he was governor, if I'm elected, I'm going to invade Iraq. An interesting one from 9/11 blogger, and it's David Ray Griffin's new book on Osama bin Laden and the 8-plus-year-long PSYOP. Osama slams Obama in a new tape. That's from military.com. And something I did, interestingly enough, I wanted to give it a shot on my Facebook page, which I essentially use as a way to post up the headlines. I import the feed from MediaMonarchy.com, and that's pretty much what my friends and folks and family see on Facebook, and hopefully they're checking it out. I posed the question the other day, do you guys really think Osama's really alive? And through all the comments, pretty much everybody said, absolutely not. The funniest one, of course, was that, you know, when they see his videos, you know, it was in regular standard def. But when they see it in really high def 1080p, then they're going to know he's alive. We also have the Watergate criminal G. Gordon Liddy noting the Obama birther meme, whether he was born in Kenya and all of that. As again, I've said a million times, I kind of relate that to focusing on the destruction of the World Trade Center. As far as 9/11 goes, it's the big showy thing that gets lots of attention but gets nothing done. And then it's all the Cairo speech and all that stuff that, again, as we're running quickly out of time, we won't even be able to go into the fact that he vowed a new beginning with Islam, seeks common ground. Again, these are coming from Politico and Raw Story. However, in his big Cairo speech, Obama mentions the quote-unquote world order, and also dismisses, quote, that some question the events of 9/11. Now, again, he's in the Middle East, so he's got to address those big conspiracy theories. As we glance at Google News real quick, we, of course, see now, 34 minutes ago from Reuters, Obama slams Holocaust deniers at a concentration camp. Obama's election has been a boon to liberal think tanks and lobbying firms. Yay! Our party's in favor. Now our foundation-funded phony grassroots group is in control. Source claims Obama intel pick tied to CIA torture program. That's from Raw Story and in the Associated Press. Obama's speech in Egypt warns not to challenge the official 9/11 story. And most interestingly enough, I'm not sure exactly when he did this, if this was in a Q&A or just in this big Cairo speech, but Obama actually admitted the U.S. involvement in the Iranian coup in 1953. Kids, that's called Operation Ajax, where the CIA helped overthrow democratically elected Mossadegh because he nationalized the oil. And damn it, we ain't going to have that. So it's a big step that Obama mentioned Operation Ajax. However, he does not admit American involvement in any false flag activities. Quickly, through the police state, as of June 1st, if you ain't got a passport, you are a prisoner inside the USA. U.S. violates human rights with humiliation of air passengers, Homeland Security to scan fingerprints of travelers exiting the U.S., New York City's eco cops, the green shirts coming soon to a rubbish bin near you. Florida County to fingerprint for video game sales. Boston cops getting semi-automatic rifles. Marines training civilians to accept the coming martial law. That was during Fleet Week in New York. And of course, it's no big deal to see the military doing some, you know, routine law enforcement. Support your local domestic war heroes or get kicked in the head. U.S. firm says the handheld puke ray is ready to go. New York State and local agencies hold a dirty bomb exercise. Wilmington, North Carolina wants surveillance cameras to record every license plate. A U.K. mother is too stupid to keep her kid. U.K. 10-year-olds taught how to spot a terrorist in a police DVD. And again, across the world, they are indoctrinating the youth. Whether it's going to be the green shirts, or, hell, maybe a little tax enforcement. The kids are gonna rat out the parents. The kids are not all right. There is a video, and again, we're totally out of time for any more clips, even though I do have some more lined up. A grandma tased at a traffic stop in Texas. An amazing one that you should really watch. A man says that cops don't own him. They tase him, and then he escapes. The fascinating thing is, and he does perhaps seem a little nutty or maybe a little drunk, but he basically invokes the power of Yahweh. The cops, of course, with their knees on him. He's invoking the power of Yahweh. Please come help me. Please come save me. And Maybe he did. The cops tase him. The guy wiggles free and he runs away. And of course, overweight cops run about 10 yards and give up. Ruling allowing taser use to get DNA may be the nation's first. That's out of BuffaloNews.com. Detention in the Constitution from the Miami Herald. Again, Obama says, I can detain you indefinitely. Taxpayer-subsidized organizations cover up of sexual abuse. That is pointed out by InfoWars on an article from Reuters about a documentary being made about Planned Parenthood, where I believe there is some quote about, well, you know, we'll get you that abortion and get you right on your way. It's like, would you like fries with that? And more importantly than that is to note the history of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, an avowed eugenicist, racist, called black people weeds. And the folks who are out, you know, trying to do the good work, they have no idea. A real Islamic group says that the Nuremberg Four are not real Muslims. Remember the plot, the big terror plot, again, FBI informant paying them, giving them the weapons, videotaping them, provocateuring it. New charges filed against the Nuremberg Four, and they all four have pleaded not guilty in plot to bomb synagogues. Internet radio host Hal Turner faces Connecticut charges. That's from the Hartford Courant. However, pointing it out in a much better way, FBI operative Hal Turner arrested. Again, as we note, a lot of these hate guys and neo-Nazis and separatists and supremacists and all that, a lot of times, kids, you find out that they are feds. They're informants. So whether it's posing up as demonstrators and protesters and causing violence, or basically being, it's classic COINTELPRO, counterintelligence program. That's where you infiltrate groups and sow mistrust. Or you infiltrate a group and talk about, yeah, let's shoot stuff, let's blow stuff up. Hal Turner, racist nut job, is an FBI operative. Be careful who you follow. U.S. intel officials link groups listed in the DHS extremist reports to an Al-Qaeda bio attack, one from Kurt Nemo, one from Steve Watson, and again, pointing out that Homeland Stupidity actually takes seriously the claims that militias may collaborate with Al-Qaeda on a bio attack. Again, homegrown terrorism, violent radicalization, again, the phony left-right, anti-abortion, gay marriage, all that stuff comes back to the fore. Waco's and the McVeighs and the culture wars and all that garbage. And again, where we point out that at the top, they talk about stuff, but ultimately, they don't care. They don't care about gay marriage. They don't care about abortion because they know that actually both those things can tie in with eugenics. That would be depopulation. InfoWars and Alex Jones has put out a nice little homage to the late, great Maverick Patriot Aaron Russo. A warning. But on to the war horrors, the American Death Squad. Of course, Obama has inherited Cheney's army of assassins and has promoted their commander. That would be Stanley McChrystal. Fort Lewis NCO, that's a non-commissioned officer, faces sex trafficking charge. U.S. Army closes Fort Campbell for 3 days after suicide surge. Study says female Marine recruits lax on sex. Army investigates nude photos at Fort Dix. General McChrystal apologizes for the Tillman confusion. Inside the military's secret terror tagging tech, as we noted a while ago, U.S. broke bombing rules in Afghanistan. More senior military sources confirm rape and sodomy at Abu Ghraib. Dan Rather even saying that a former detainee says that torture is still going on, and of course it is. And the last note on that, did Mancow fake his waterboarding for publicity? If you'll recall that last week, it does look pretty weak. Couple notes about West Virginia worry. My home state of West Virginia, born and raised, 28 years there, only 4 here in Oregon. Disturbing notes. And my heart always goes out because West Virginia is always at the top of the bad lists or at the bottom of the good lists. Judge arranges sterilization as part of a Charleston woman's probation. That's from WVGazette.com. Alternate asking the question if West Virginia officials have lost their minds when it comes to water safety standards that are pretty much lower than anywhere else in the country. Kentucky.com and the affiliated newspapers point out that perhaps Obama caved in to coal pressure, and again, reneging on all the sort of perceived change promises that you projected onto Obama that you thought were going to happen. He's now approved 42 mountaintop mining permits in West Virginia. And the last note, Senator Robert Byrd, the longest-serving senator in U.S. history, has a staph infection and is in the hospital. And that's pretty much going to do it, folks. I really now don't have time to go over some of the latest things on Food World Order, but hell, let's read them off anyway. A Memphis Burger King serves up global warming bologna, where they put global warming is bologna on a bunch of their drive-through signs and big overhead signs. The other disturbing one, Portland company recalls ground beef over E. coli fears. That is from the Oregonian. I thought I had the clip, but it didn't come with me. It didn't make it, but a writer was forcibly removed from near Air Force One last Saturday. From the Herald Sun, a writer for a small newspaper attempted to hand Obama a letter but was forcibly removed from the area. This was May 29th, shortly before Obama arrived at a L.A. airport. In bizarre scenes, airport security officers carried the woman away by the feet and the arms. Her name is Brenda Lee. She writes for the Georgia Informer in Macon, Georgia. She is a Roman Catholic priestess and was carrying a letter she had written opposing gay marriage. If you'd like to see the photo of what it looks like when Secret Service people drag away women, well, there you go. The last note was the amazing 88th episode of the Corbett Report. CorbettReport.com, episode 88, You Are Being Programmed. We've talked about Edward Bernays, and we all know about propaganda, but there's more to the media control than corporate advertising. Public opinion and attitudes are shaped through the media we consume, from TV to movies to books. So this episode explores how some of the TV shows and movies that are working to transform your conscious opinions and subconscious mind. There's also a video report breaking down Aldous Huxley's Brave New World in the latest installment of the Corbett Report's Film, Literature, and the New World Order. Big thanks to James Corbett and all the hard, great work that he does. Episode 88, You Are Being Programmed, is in a way what I would sometimes like Media Monarchy to actually focus on. The day-to-day ins and outs of media manipulation, particulation, if you will. Participate in your own manipulation. So, again, hats off to James Corbett. And again, hats off and thanks to Clyde Lewis and our new affiliate, KRocksRadio1.com, 92.3 FM in Casper, Wyoming, as well as worldwide on the web. And again, Portland Radio Authority, Revere Radio Network, Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, and Cascadia Public Radio, thank you, thank you, thank you. Quickly. Creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. If you're new out there, I track the visitors to the website through the back-end stat counter, and it is fascinating. We had visits from the Army.mil headquarters, USAISC. They hit me up from a Facebook link of undetermined origin. Sherwin Williams at Lexington Park, Maryland, Googled government experiments on U.S. soldiers. And they did. And they do. Again, Army.mil. Now, the Social Security Administration, they Googled active shooter, .wave, police scanner. The Department of Transportation Googled CIA contract. And amazingly enough, all you have to do is Google that, and you will land on MediaMonarchy.com to read about the murder of William Bennett. Corporation for National Research Initiatives out of Rockville, Maryland, Googled Regina Dugan sexual affair, DARPA. She was one of the people touted to be the new head of DARPA, and unbeknownst to me, but thanks to being able to look at some of the spooks' Google searches, apparently she's got some sex scandals. Department of Homeland Security out of Springfield, they were reading last year's story about four Philly cops to be fired over Philly beating. The House of Representatives, we had NASA, where they were reading about the mistaken revelation of civilian nuclear sites. Again, Army.mil, this time from Dugway Proving Ground. I believe that's out of Utah. New site, details chemical warfare and LSD tests. Keene State College out of New Hampshire Googled Yusuf Harp and June 2009 Air France crash. We had Disney Worldwide Services Google Adnan Khashoggi laser hologram. That, of course, brings up Operation Bluebeam. John Hopkins Googled Zach Lemnois and MIT. He, of course, I think being touted to be some new cybersecurity guy. We had NORAD out of Colorado Springs. We had DARPA visiting. We had the Loudoun County Department of Information Technology, again, reading part three on the murder of William Bennett. Berkeley College out of Wayne, New Jersey. Bayer. We mentioned Bayer. They're Nazis. They're reading about the Bayer pesticide factory explosion last year in West Virginia. We had Riverside Hospitals out of London this morning, Google Air France, Flight 447, conspiracy. We again had NASA, and finally, the Aluminum Company of America out of Reston, Virginia, Googled Blue Beam Project. It all ties in, my friends. It's all a part of the media monarchy. I've run too long. I'm over time. I got to get out. Thank you for listening. I love you for it. Help me spread the word about the site and show. It's June 5th, 2009, episode 126 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato, imploring you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.